All right, welcome everyone to today's Google Search Central SEO Office Hours Hangout. My name is John Mueller. I'm a search advocate at Google in Switzerland. And part of what I do are these office hour hangouts where people can join in and ask their questions around their website and web search. And we can try to find some answers. Looks like a lot of stuff was submitted on YouTube as well, but a bunch of people are already jumping in and raising their hands. So let's get started with some live questions. Let's see. Praveen, I think you're first up.
Hi, John. How are you?
Hi.
So you might have answered this question in the past, but I didn't find the reference. So I just want to know that, as we know that for Core Web Vitals, Google uses this Chrome user experience data. So I want to know, for this Chrome user experience data that Google uses for Core Web Vitals, does Google only consider users that were coming from Google organic search, or all the Chrome users, irrespective of their traffic channel or source?
It's not tied to people clicking from Google search.
So basically, all Chrome users.
Well, it's not all Chrome users because of the way that the Chrome user experience report collects the data. But it's not tied to any specific kind of like source of traffic for your website.
OK, so what kind of users does Google see? Like, if this is a user falls into that category that we should consider for this report?
I don't know it offhand. I think it has to do with the settings in Chrome, that you have it set up that you're kind of submitting user feedback through Chrome, those kind of things. But I don't know the exact details offhand.
OK, sure. Thank you.
Cool. All right, Christian.
No. Yes. Hi, good morning, John. So I've got a question. So I have this website I'm looking for, and we have this situation that this website hasn't been migrated to mobile first indexing. There is kind of mixed state. We have some pages which have a separate mobile version, and some other pages are responsive. And the link structure is kind of unclear. So I suspect that this might be the reason for the website not to be migrated to mobile first yet, and just wanted to confirm if this is true or if there might be other reasons for that.
I don't know. My guess is maybe at the time where we were migrating all of the websites over, maybe that was causing it to kind of be held back. As far as I know, there's still a kind of a batch of mobile first indexing sites that are just not migrated over. And it's something where we're working through some of the bigger sites there step by step to make sure that they can all be migrated cleanly. And then when we have kind of the bigger issues resolved, then we'll migrate the rest as well. So my guess is the website is kind of in this holding position where it's not necessarily that they're doing anything wrong now. It's just back when we checked, it wasn't perfect.
OK, so you would say it's good to just wait a little bit longer and to see what happens?
Yeah, I don't know what the timeline is, but my guess is, like, towards the first half of next year, we will be migrating all of the remaining sites over.
Oh, okay.
And then you'd probably see that happen.
Okay, okay. Cool. Thank you.
Sure. Akash.
Hi, John. Hi.
Hi.
One of my clients' website will be, down for a week or, for 2 weeks. Okay. And the reason why I'm here is, there are a few bugs on the website, and that's the reason they said, they wanted to take the whole website down for like a week or a two. And my question is only related, although there will be traffic laws and so, but how can I tell Google that this is the temporary situation? It will be only for the 2 weeks and our website will be live. Is there anything that I could, display a page showing, the website is temporarily down and will be displayed in, that the countdown is there on my page, it's been within 2 weeks or the 10 days, like something like that. Can I tell to Google that, you know, this website is currently down, but it will be just, you know, going back live again within like 2 weeks or a week. But there shouldn't be any ranking loss that I, or there could be only minimum ranking loss that I could get, like something like that.
I don't think you'll be able to do it for that time, regardless of whatever you set up. So for an outage of maybe a day or so, using a 503 result code is a great way to tell us that we should check back. But after a couple of days, we think this is a permanent result code, and we think your pages are just gone. And then we will drop them from the index. And when the pages come back, we will crawl them again, and we will try to index them again. It's essentially during that time, we will probably drop a lot of the pages from the website, from our index. And there's a pretty good chance that it'll come back in kind of a similar way, but it's not always guaranteed. So anytime you have a longer outage where I'm thinking like more than a couple of days, I would assume that at least temporarily you will have really strong fluctuations, and it's going to take a little bit of time to get back in. It's not impossible, because these things happen sometimes, but if there's anything that you can do to avoid this kind of outage, I would try to do that. And that could be something like setting up a static version of the website somewhere and just showing that to users for the time being. But like, especially if you're doing this in a planned way, I would try to find ways to reduce the outage to less than a day, if at all possible.
OK. Well, thank you so much. That answers my query. Thank you so much. Then sure. I get that piece of the client.
Good luck. Hazel.
Hi, John. Good morning. It's me again. So we want to ask some questions about Google bot, ad bots. So do you think will disallow ads URL to the Google bot in the robots text will affect our Google ads? And maybe that cause ads won't work normally?
So as far as I know, the ads bot doesn't follow the normal robots text directives. You have to use the user agent directly for it. But I don't know what the effect would be on the ad side if you block ads bot. My understanding is we use this as a way to do kind of like quality checks for the landing page. And I don't know what that would mean from a quality point of view for ads if you don't let ads bot check these pages.
The reason we talk about this question is that we recently found that Google bot crawled our ads URL more than normal page URLs. But we want Google bots to crawl more normal product pages instead of these ads. So we just think if it's OK to block ads URL for Google bot.
Sure. That's perfectly fine. Blocking the ads landing pages for Googlebot is fine. If you block the ads pages for AdsBot, then that's something you'd have to check with the ads folks.
Yeah, that's not what we do.
Okay.
Also about the Google bots, does AdsBot share a same crawl budget with Googlebot?
Yes.
Yes, so that means maybe the crawl request from AdsBot increase, and maybe Googlebot's crawl less.
Yes, it can happen. Usually, it settles down fairly quickly. I don't know the details from the ad side, but my understanding is when you submit new ads campaigns, then the AdsBot checks all of those pages. And once that's checked, then they don't need to be checked as often as usual.
Okay, I see. So if we're blocking the ads URLs in the Googlebot, but Googlebot maybe still crawl too many ads URLs, what can we do? Maybe some measures to handle this situation, to let the Googlebot to crawl more product pages.
So I think if you're blocking the ads landing pages for Googlebot specifically, then we shouldn't be crawling the ads landing pages with Googlebot. It would really only be the ads bot that's crawling it.
Because previous time we blocked some certain pages in the robots tags, but we still see that sometimes Googlebots still crawl these pages even though we block them. So we just want to make sure that it's working.
Yeah, it should never be the case that if we've recognized the robots text file that we still crawl the URL anyway from Googlebot. So that feels like either something we would have to know as soon as possible, or maybe some mistake with things like upper and lower case in the URLs, or not exactly the right path being included in the robots text file.
Okay, so normally if we block in the robots text, it shouldn't be crawled by Googlebot.
Yeah, and if you see situations where the ads bot crawling like severely drowns out everything else, I would use that contact form that we have in the help center to report problems with Googlebot. I think you've used it before in the past as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that also goes to the Googlebot team, and they can kind of help to distribute the requests a little bit better, and contact the ads team and tell them to slow down with this website, those kind of things.
Sure. If we notice something unusual, we'll definitely would report it to Google. So another question is about 304 response code. Do you think the 304 response code affects crawling? Because logically, if Googlebot check a URL with the same content and it returns 304 code at first time, and maybe there's a possibility that Googlebot may reduce the crawling for the same URL because it returns to the 304 code.
So I think there are two things. So the 304 is, I think, in response to the if modified since requests, where Googlebot mm-hmm. tries to see like if this page has changed. And my understanding is that a 304 response code would not apply to the crawl budget side of things. So that basically means for us, like we can reuse that request and crawl something else on a website. So there's that aspect. And the other aspect with regards to crawling that specific URL less, I don't think that would be the case. But we do try to figure out how often pages change. And we try to recrawl pages based on kind of the assumed page frequency or update frequency that we have. So it's not so much that particular URL would get crawled less frequently. It's more that, oh, we understand a bit better how often these pages change. And then based on that, we can update our refresh crawling a little bit.
So if most of pages on a site returns to 304, so maybe it's a signal for Googlebot that this site has no new updated content. Maybe reduce the crawling rate?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think we would reduce the crawling rate. We would just try to focus more on maybe the parts where we do see updates happening. So I would definitely not kind of artificially hide the 304s in the hope that it improves the crawling.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So also about the crawling issues, since our crawling rate is back to normal, and we noticed that our crawl request from smartphone is recovering much more faster than desktop. Could you shed some lights on it? Any possible reasons behind this?
I don't know. It sounds like what would be expected with mobile first indexing, that we crawl a bit more with mobile. I don't know if your specific site has already moved to mobile first indexing. But then that would be normal, that we just crawl more with mobile, and then you would see any changes faster there.
Yeah, okay. So it's mobile first indexing.
Yeah.
Last one question is about more general one, is about 301 redirects. We are doing some, taking down some useful pages and doing 301 redirects to them, and we just think will a huge amount of 301 redirects do harm to a site?
That's perfectly fine. Like if you're making changes on your website and redirecting, that's perfectly fine.
So no matter how many pages we make redirects.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. That's good to hear.
Cool.
Thanks. That's where we all my question.
Thanks. Let's see, Reshmi.
Hi, June.
Hi,
this is the first time actually I'm attending this session. It's regarding to our e-commerce website. This year only we have launched one e-commerce website. And for 70 plus countries, we have created Ahreflang. And our URL structure for different countries we have created, like we have established in UAE. So UAE, we have like EN_AE. And when it comes to US, our website structure is xyz.com/EN_US, like that we have created for 70 plus countries. And the language is in English, and for all the regions, our content is same, except for some regions, we have like mentioned few cities, like UAE, we have mentioned cities like our Emirates, like Dubai, Sharjah, and when it comes to US. But overall, the content is same, and we have more than 800,000 products on our website. And this year only we have launched. And for other countries also, even though our language is not in English, we have created locally like BG_BG, like for Bulgaria and all. And initially we have submitted all the sitemap for all these regions as well. And first we have experienced that Google started crawling your website and almost 350,000 URLs got indexed. Then we have started experiencing like de-indexing of the URLs. So we first thought it can be the speed of the website, and then we have increased the speed. And then again, we started experiencing, okay, the URL got indexed. Later stage, then again, it stopped. Then what we did, we removed all the submitted URLs, and then we have the URL structure like xyz.com/en. Then we submitted the URL. Now we are experiencing like de-indexing of the URL, and when we submitted the website structure like /en, we have experienced that all the indexed URLs are going to the excluded list. And we don't know what is the exact reason behind that. What can be the reason? Is it because of the, since the language is in English and we have created different URL structure, and we don't know exactly. Now the indexed URL is showing is only 160,000.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know your website, so it's really hard to say, but
okay.
Overall, from what you've mentioned, it sounds like you have a lot of URLs. And
yes.
You have those 70 different country and language versions on top of that. So everything is multiplied by like 70.
Yes.
From my kind of offhand assumption is that this is just too much. So it's not that from a technical point of view that we can't handle that, but essentially you're submitting so much content, and you have everything multiplied by 70, essentially. And that means for us that we start somewhere and we start indexing some things, but there's almost no chance for us to get through to everything. So usually what I recommend in these kind of situations is start off with a very small number of different country and language versions and make sure that they're working well, and then expand incrementally from there. And in particular, if you have a lot of like English variations, then try to make sure that you just have maybe one English landing or English site rather than like all of the different English country versions, which are essentially the same thing. Because if you have fewer versions of the English content, it's a lot easier for us to focus on that for indexing and to kind of treat that a little bit better when it comes to ranking overall. So that's kind of my my general recommendation would be so that's kind of the thing. With regards to international versions, it's very easy to take a website and say, I will just make all English language countries and create like 100 different versions of a website. But it just causes so many problems and makes everything in the whole crawling and indexing and ranking cycle makes everything so much harder. So that would be kind of the direction I would head, is just start off a lot smaller and then build out from there.
So that means Google is considering as a duplicate?
Sure. I mean, if these English versions are all essentially the same thing, then for the most part, we will treat it as duplicates. And then it's kind of hit and miss which version actually ends up being indexed. So that's, I think, a large part of the issue there is that we just see all of these different copies of the same thing, and we don't know what you really want us to do. We have to focus on a small part of it. We can't do everything at once. So it ends up causing almost more problems for your website by having all of these different versions.
That means we are going in the wrong direction.
Probably, or moving too fast. I don't know. It's something where it's very easy to take a really large website that's doing well and say, oh, we will just copy their system and take all of the different English versions and language versions and do the same thing. But if you're not in the situation of that large, well-known website already, then it's very different for you. And then it's a lot harder to actually get to kind of expanding. So I would try to pick one English version, maybe one other language version to start off with, and then expand from there.
Yeah, because since we want to target worldwide, because it's an e-commerce website and we want to target worldwide and we want to improve our SEO, we just targeted in this way, creating different URLs and locating, different countries like that. So I think we can focus only on the main domain instead of like creating locally, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would do, yeah.
And no need of going for the EN. I mean, the URL structure should be like www.xyz.com instead of the locale, right?
You can have the locale in there. It doesn't really matter. But again, I would make it so that you primarily just have one English version rather than all of the other variations of English as well.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. John.
Sure. Okay. Let's see, Gakushi.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm new, and bear with me if my question isn't clear enough. But we have a website with about, say, 20, 30,000 pages. And it's like a directory service, but we have unique content. So we put no index to probably about 2/3 of those pages because we wanted to kind of concentrate what Google looks at. But after a month or so, only less than 1% of those pages are indexed, and we're getting identified or discovered but not indexed for almost all the pages. So kind of scratching our heads what we can do. Made a lot of tweaks, and looks like internal linking is all right. We might be restricting ourselves a little bit by the canonical setting, but they don't look wrong. So in the end, we kind of figured, you know, going through your videos and stuff, it might be a site quality issue because there are predecessors with kind of similar content that are already indexed. And yet we do have very unique content. The problem may be that that unique content is not text, it's data. And it looks like a lot of the quality is assessed by sort of things that's readable by human being. But our service is really focused on a number that is very valuable. And we're just wondering what we can do. Should we kind of try to squeeze in text, which isn't actually central to what we do? Or are there things that we can do to tell Google that is actually valuable to people who visit our sites?
Okay, I think in general, having numbers on a page is fine and is something that we do see as being kind of part of unique content on a page. So just because a lot of the content is kind of numerical wouldn't necessarily mean that we would see the whole page as being duplicate. So it's hard for me to kind of estimate what kind of site it is with regards to kind of, like you mentioned, it's a directory type site. From a quality point of view, I do think that matters quite a bit in terms of how much we actually index from your website. So that's something where I would probably still focus on that. If you're saying the site is like 25,000 pages large, it feels like something that we should be able to index if it's something that we would consider to be reasonable quality website. And when it comes to kind of the quality assessment, it is something where we do look at the content of the page and we try to make sure that it's not duplicate, but we also try to understand the bigger picture of that page within kind of the context of the rest of the web. So that sometimes makes it a little bit trickier.
Right. Just as a follow-up, we're getting discovered and not indexed rather than crawled and not indexed for those 99%. Should we differentiate between those two? Because our site is not that big, and this can't be a crawl budget issue, in my view. In that case, are those two designations pretty much the same in that it's just a quality issue?
I don't know your website, so it's hard for me to say offhand. But if it's something where you're seeing kind of the clean URLs being listed in the discovered not indexed report, essentially the URLs that you do want to have indexed, then to me that sounds like it's really less a matter of like Google can't go off and crawl that many URLs, because again, with like 25,000 pages, most servers that are kind of reasonably sized can easily allow that kind of crawling on a regular basis. And it's probably really more a matter of our understanding of the overall website quality. With larger websites, or if in the discovered not indexed report, you see that there are lots of different variations of URLs, like with parameters or with upper lowercase, those kind of things, that can be a sign that the internal linking is kind of messy and that we're having trouble finding the right URLs to crawl. But if we're showing the right URLs in the discovered not indexed report and it's a reasonably small website, then to me that kind of more points in the direction of the overall site quality.
Right. So do you think we should try to add text in there? What we show is really a directory of companies, and we show what a stock price means in terms of future growth of that company. So it's a number. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of sort of readable text that goes with it. It's just, you know, a number. Does this $20 stock mean 10% growth or 15% growth is what's valuable? Yeah. We can add it. We do have a description, but it's common to all those companies. And, you know, we got to figure out what to do. If we were to squeeze in unique text per each company, but should we head to that direction, do you think?
I don't think the text will affect how we index the pages. So from that point of view, it's something where if you see the text affecting how users kind of look at your pages and are able to interact with your pages, then sure. But that's more a matter of trying to figure out what users are actually looking for and where you can provide unique value to your users. But just kind of adding text to pages, I don't think would affect how we would crawl and index those pages. If it's something where you're providing numbers like, I don't know, like the stock numbers there, that's something where I would also try to figure out what you can do to make sure that what you're providing is unique and provides value to users, and do something maybe along the lines of a user study to figure out what is it that we can do to make our website such that users recommend it to other people as well. And kind of that it builds up almost like, I don't know, trust or something from the user point of view. And a lot of times those are not purely technical things that you change on a website, where you change a design or you convert some of the text, some of the numbers into text, for example. It's really a matter of kind of the overall setup of the website.
Great, thank you so much.
Sure. Let me run through some of the submitted questions, and then we'll get back to like the giant number of people who have their hands raised. Wow, so many today. Let's see. Does Google have any trouble indexing sites that have a mobile version on a subdomain, for example, example.com and m.example.com? And then the question goes into like they're seeing a lot of pages indexed without content. So from our point of view, we don't have, well, at least as far as I know, we don't have any problems with m.domains in general, in the sense that this is one of the supported formats that we have for mobile websites. We don't recommend the m.dot setup. So if you're setting up a new website, I would try to avoid that as much as possible and instead use a responsive setup. But it is something that can work. So if you're seeing this regularly with your website, that we're not able to index your mobile content properly, then to me, that would point more at an issue on your website, where when mobile Googlebot is trying to crawl, it's not able to access everything as expected. So that's kind of the direction I would head there to try to clean that up. The one thing that throws people off sometimes with m.domains is with mobile-first indexing, we switch to the m.dot version as the canonical URL. And it can happen that we show the m.dot version in the desktop search results as well. So you also need to watch out for not only redirecting mobile users from the desktop to the mobile version, but also redirecting desktop users from the mobile to the desktop version. And again, that's something, if you have a responsive design setup, you don't have to worry about that. So it's like another reason to go responsive, if possible. Would I be penalized if I don't set the rel sponsored or rel nofollow for my affiliate links? Probably not. So from our point of view, affiliate links kind of fall into that category of something financial attached to the link. So we really strongly recommend to use this setup. But for the most part, if it doesn't come across as you selling links, then it's not going to be the case that we would manually penalize a website for having affiliate links and not marking them up. It is a best practice, and I strongly recommend doing that. But it's not something where I'd say we will go off and kind of manually take action on these sites. A few months ago, we made a CMS migration, and our URL structure completely changed. All of our URLs execute 301 redirects to the new addresses, and we have improved technical indicators. After that, we realized our organic traffic dropped a lot, and immediately after the URLs changed. Is that what we should expect? What time does it take? So when you move from one domain to another, it's very easy for us to just transfer everything from that domain to the new one. And that's something that can be processed within almost like a week or so in many cases. However, if you change the internal URLs within your website, then that's something that does take quite a bit of time. Because essentially, we can't just transfer the whole website in one direction. We have to almost reprocess the whole website and understand the context of all of the pages on the website first. And that can take a significant amount of time. And during that time, you will almost certainly see fluctuations. So my kind of like offhand guess would be you will definitely see at least a month of fluctuations there, perhaps even longer, especially if it's a bigger change within the website itself. The other thing is when you change your CMS, oftentimes things that are associated with the CMS also change. And that includes a lot of things around internal linking, for example, and also the way that your pages are structured in many cases. And changing all of those things can also result in fluctuations. It can be that the final state is higher or better than it was before. It can also be that the final state is less strong than it was before. So that's something where, like, changing a CMS and changing all of the internal linking on a website, changing the internal URLs on a website, changing the design of these pages, these are all individually things which can cause fluctuations and can cause drops and perhaps even rises over time. But doing that all together means that it's going to be messy for a while. So that's something where, on the one hand, waiting to see what happens is something you almost have to do. But at the same time, I would also recommend, really, from a technical point of view, trying to understand all of the differences between your new version of your website and your old one, and try to figure out which of these changes are better and which of these changes might be worse and which things you might want to clean up. Archive.org is a great way of looking at your website kind of in the past. So I would use that to try to figure out like what things looked like before, how the internal linking was set up, what anchor texts were there, what headings, what kind of text was there, all of that. Another thing to watch out for with these kind of migrations is oftentimes there's embedded content that you don't think about directly because it's not an HTML page. And a really common one is images. And if you don't redirect your old image URLs, then we have to kind of reprocess them and find them again new because we don't have that connection between the old images and the new ones. So if your site was getting a lot of image search traffic, that can also have a significant effect. And setting up those redirects probably still makes sense, even if you've moved after, I don't know, a month or so. I don't know what the timing here was. Then I have not a technical question, but a career question. What is your advice for someone interested in pursuing a career in SEO? What should they focus on if they already started learning and are familiar with the basics? How to go from there to become great at SEO? I don't know. I don't get these kind of questions often, so I don't have a perfect answer lined up. From my point of view, what I kind of like about SEO is that there's so many different angles where people can kind of dive in and understand a little bit more. And oftentimes, people have interests in, I don't know, figuring out what to do with regards to content or figuring out trying to understand the audiences that are involved, trying to understand the technical details of a website, maybe even going into the direction of JavaScript and developing things. And all of these are, I think, really neat angles. And they're all important for SEO. It's not that one of these is going to go away and suddenly you'll be stuck. So my recommendation there would kind of be to figure out which of these angles you really enjoy doing, and try to figure out ways to do a little bit more of that. One of the things I've recommended in the past, which might also be appropriate here, is to take part in the different webmaster and SEO forums. So Google has, I think, a help community as well. And there are definitely others out there as well. And the good part there with all of these forums is that you see a lot of different scenarios. And you run into situations where you see where you can kind of like dive in and try to understand, well, what is the problem here? And how could I solve this? And whether or not you actively take part in the forum and kind of post your suggestions there, at least the opportunity to look at individual situations where you see, well, there's a problem here. How can I try to figure this out myself? I think that is really valuable. And that's really important in the long run, because a lot of times you will see the same kind of problem come back over and over again. And if you understand kind of the patterns there, it's a lot easier for you to jump in and say, well, this is the same pattern as I've seen before. And that means I need to double check these three or these five things first. I think that's always really valuable to kind of see and practice a little bit more. But again, there's so many different options and so many different directions that you could take. It's hard to say, it's like, you need to do this one thing to become better at SEO. Let's see. I have a situation with a site where the main navigational links is visually different from the mobile and the desktop versions. The mobile version is slimmer, and the desktop version has more links. Looking exclusively at crawling, the desktop is more helpful. For technical reasons, we can't hide the desktop links in the source. and the site is on mobile first indexing already. Is there a chance that Google might think I'm trying to game the algorithms by keeping this more link-rich navigation, even though it's invisible to mobile users and bots? So I think overall, this is a fairly common setup for responsive design in that you have kind of both variations visible in the HTML. And from that point of view, I don't see it as being super problematic, but it's probably also not super clean because you kind of have to maintain both variations of the UI within the same HTML rather than having just one variation in the HTML that you adjust depending on the frame, the viewport size of the device. So from that point of view, I don't think you would be penalized for anything like this. Well, definitely not penalized because it's a very common setup. It's probably not optimal, but it's also not something where I would say you need to jump in and fix that right away. So that's kind of my assessment there. My question is about dealing with outdated blogs on our platform. We have about 450 blogs, some of which are 4 to 5 years old and therefore out of date and have almost no traffic on them. Do you recommend deleting them because they hurt our general search rankings? What's the best way? Delete all without traffic at once and request index deletion at Google, or do you recommend step-by-step approach? So I think with blogs, you probably mean like blog posts, so individual pages, not like whole sets of pages. Because I think if you have so many different like sets of pages, it's probably a bigger change. But with 450 pages, say more or less, where you're saying, well, these don't get a lot of traffic. Should I just delete them or not? From my point of view, probably that's something where you can just make that call on your own. I don't see that as being something where, from an SEO point of view, you would see a significant change, unless these are really, really terrible blog posts. The main thing, however, I would kind of watch out for is that just because something doesn't have a lot of traffic doesn't mean that it's a bad piece of content. It can mean that it's something that just gets traffic very rarely, maybe once a year, or maybe it's something that is very seasonal, that like overall, when you look at it from a website point of view, it's not very relevant, but it's relevant, I don't know, maybe right before Christmas, for example. So from that point of view, I would say it's fine to go through a website and figure out which parts you want to keep and which parts you want to kind of clean out. But just purely looking at traffic for figuring out which parts you want to clean out, I think that's too simplified. But again, from an SEO point of view, like removing 450 pages from a larger website, that's like tiny change. And I wouldn't worry about when you do that and how exactly you do that. Delete them whenever you kind of like recognize that they're no longer valuable. Delete them all at once. That's also an option. With regards to submitting them with the removal tool as well in Search Console, that probably wouldn't change anything, because the removal tool in Search Console just hides the page in the search results. It doesn't actually remove anything from indexing. So that's kind of like one thing you don't have to do. But again, otherwise, I would just like think about which pages you want to keep, which ones you want to remove, and go through it like that. Would a query string at the end of an image source URL have a negative effect for SEO? We use it for cache invalidation when an image is edited. So no, it wouldn't cause issues with regards to SEO. But with images in general, we tend to recrawl and reprocess them much less frequently. So that means that if you're regularly changing the image URLs linked in your website, we would have to kind of refine those again and put them in our image index again. And that tends to take a lot longer than with normal HTML pages. So from that point of view, if you can avoid doing that too often, I would recommend doing that. if it's something that happens, I don't know, very rarely, and where you're saying, well, it doesn't really matter too much how things are processed in image search, we don't rely on image search for traffic to our website, then from that point of view, that's totally non-issue. The thing I would avoid, especially here with image URLs, is that you embed something that changes very quickly. So something like a session ID or just like always today's date, because that would probably change more often than we would reprocess the image URLs. And then we would never be able to index any of the images for image search. Let's see. Maybe I'll just go back to more live questions since we have so many people here. Bruno, over to you.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Thank you for this opportunity. John, we are from a news website here in Brazil. And we have a question about a problem that we're going through in the last few days in our website. We're going through a huge drop in the delivery of our content through Google Discover. And now Google Discover is our main acquisition channel. But in the last 10 days, the delivery of our content through Discover has dropped to practically zero. Our normal audience was kind of 1,000 active users in real time. And now it's about 90 or 100 active users. And we didn't change anything technical or editorial. In our Search Console, did not report any problem. We have all Core Web Vitals ratings very high. In our Crux reports, it's OK too, are all above 80%. Our website is 100% AMP. And we don't know what's happening. What do you think could be happening with us? Can we do something to fix this problem in Discover? We don't know what's happening.
Yeah. I think it's always tricky with Discover because it's at least what I hear from people, it's very binary in that either you get like a lot of traffic or you don't get a lot of traffic from Discover. And that also means that any changes there tend to be very visible. So my main recommendation is not to rely on Google Discover for traffic, but rather to see it as an additional traffic source and not as the main one. When it comes to Discover, there are a few things that kind of play in there. You mentioned some of the technical things that I think are good practices. One of the things that also plays in there is, for example, the core updates also play a role. We recently had a core update, maybe from a timing point of view, that matches what you saw there. So that's something where if you do see an effect from the core update, then I would double check the blog post that we have about core updates with like the large number of tips and ideas that you could focus on. The other thing is with Discover in particular, we have a set of content guidelines that we try to stick to in an algorithmic way. And depending on the website itself, it might be something where some of these content guidelines, your website is kind of borderline. So for example, like I don't know the content guidelines all by heart, but I think there is something around like clickbaity titles or clickbaity content in general, or kind of adult-oriented content, for example. And it might be that your website is kind of borderline there with the regards to how we kind of evaluate your website in that regard. And then it can also happen that our algorithms say, oh, well, a large part of this website is just clickbait or kind of one of the other categories that we list in the content guidelines, and then we will be a lot kind of more conservative with regards to how we show the website in Discover. So those are kind of like, without knowing your website, that's kind of the direction I would head. On the one hand, the core updates, kind of think about that. On the other hand, the content guidelines that we have. And then finally, I would still make sure that you don't rely on Discover for your business overall, because it can change fairly quickly. And it's something where often they're not pure technical reasons behind those changes.
OK, thank you.
Cool. Brian.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Nice to meet you finally.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. First one, on a Reddit post a few weeks ago, I believe, you mentioned that having less than 30 pages would make Google consider the website less authoritative, right? And what I know that that leaves it open to SEOs writing, you have to have minimum 30 articles to rank, etc. But my question concerns the other extreme. What about one-page sites?
I think you can make good one-page sites. So from that point of view, I'm not too worried about that. I think the Reddit post, as far as I remember it, was something along the lines, I created 30 blog posts and they're really good, and therefore my website should be authoritative. And from my point of view, like if you going off and creating 30 blog posts does not automatically make your website authoritative. And especially for kind of the higher or the more critical topics, it's something where you can't just create 30 blog posts on a medical topic and then say, like, I am a doctor, I've written 30 articles. So that was kind of the direction I was headed there. And for a lot of websites, it's not that you need to be seen as an authority. You essentially put your content out there. If you're a small business, you're selling something, like you don't need to be an authority. And especially things like one-page websites, they're often very focused on this one thing, and you don't need to be an authority to do that one thing, to sell, I don't know, an ebook or to give information about opening hours for a business. It's like, it's just information. So from that point of view, having a one-page website, I think it's perfectly fine. With regards to starting out with a one-page website, I think that's fine. I would just think about, like, well, where do you want to go from there at some point? Maybe you do want to create more pages, and try to find a way that you don't paint yourself into a corner by saying, well, I have to put everything on one page all the time, but rather expand when you see that it fits.
OK, the second question is actually more of a hypothetical. So for international SEO, say you have a site that is basically generally well-established. They have links going to it, all that stuff. It's generally good from an SEO standpoint. But at one point, they decided to roll their international URLs and set up into one domain. Say for example, it would be something like Media News United States, as opposed to the international URLs and the international setup. What, and aside from the obvious, from things like links being combined, maybe not being redirected properly, stuff like that, what else would, and say Google all of a sudden decide to drop traffic 90% after that implementation, assuming that everything was done 100% correctly, which is likely not to be the case on a larger site like that, what would happen to cause Google to drop traffic like that in such a scenario?
It's hard to say. So usually what I would do in a case like this is try to figure out if things have settled down or not. Because if it's in this flux period, it's really hard to determine what things should be like. And then I would try to dig into both individual pages and individual queries. So in Search Console, figure out, like, what, I don't know, the top 50 queries were, and look at the top 50 queries now and see, like, are there certain queries which have dropped? Or is it more a matter of, like, everything overall kind of dropping slightly, to try to figure out, is this based on individual parts of the site, or is it kind of like an overall change? And the same thing on a page level as well. Often what I find when I look at things on a page level is that individual pages that used to get a lot of traffic suddenly don't work anymore. They're like 404, or they got redirected incorrectly, or something like that. And then it's something where it's suddenly not clear what actually happened there, in that you see, well, some of these top traffic pages are gone now, then of course the overall traffic would be kind of visibly affected by that as well. But usually going and trying to find ways to figure out like what the details were of that change that helps to understand a little bit better which direction people should start looking.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much.
Cool. Thanks. All right, David.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Last one in, I guess. So I posted this also in the comments. So I have a small website and it's a couple of hundred URLs only. It's a software company and this is a small team producing content like white papers and help articles and blog posts. And it has been going well for a long time. And suddenly now in November, the posted pieces, the published pieces are not indexed anymore, not all of them, which is very sad because they're writing nice little pieces for Black Friday, how to write my newsletter for Black Friday or for Christmas. And then we're sitting there and seeing that Google is crawling them or discovering them. We see that in the Search Console, but it's not indexed. So I tried everything. I looked at the technical issues. The linking is good. So my question is there a paradigm shift that Google is saying, well, thanks for suggesting these new, publishing these articles, but we don't want it right now? Is this something new that has changed recently?
Not really, at least not that I know of, let's mm-hmm. say. I think what I see a lot with regards to a lot of the indexing questions that I get nowadays is from a technical point of view, it's very easy for websites to make websites that just work. Like you set up WordPress, and then mm-hmm. essentially all of the SEO is done for you. It just works. And from our point of view, this means that it's less often a case that there's a technical problem with a page that it doesn't get indexed. That means all of the content that we get is essentially technically OK, and our systems have to be a lot more critical with regards to the overall quality of the website, the quality of the pieces of content that we get. And then it's something where, additionally, in Search Console, we give you all of the information on things like discovered, not indexed, or crawled, but not indexed. And then suddenly, you see all of these problems. And it seems like something that people have to fix. So from that point of view, it feels like it's kind of normal for us to get a lot more of these indexing questions just because, well, a lot of content is kind of OK. And we still can't index everything on the web, so we have to make a cut somewhere. Mm-hmm. That said, if you're really looking in situations where you're seeing this is a smaller website and the content is really reasonable, and it's not something where they're just like rewriting news articles from other people's sites, I would love to have example URLs.
I pasted them actually in the comments.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And I would love to hear your, because you know, it's just it's not, you know, you could say it's not a big deal. I understand that Google cannot index everything, and we do rank for some of these topics. For example, Black Friday 2020, we rank for that. And now you wrote a new piece, Black Friday 2021, what to do with your customers. And it's a handwritten piece. Yeah. So the question would be there, should we just lay off the content team? Because it's really expensive to produce content. I mean, they're writing on those pieces a couple of days. I mean, those are nice ladies. They're sitting there and writing those content, and then they're not getting indexed. And we're not getting any traffic from Google for that. So basically, the management is asking me, well, why should we do that? There's no sense in producing good content if we don't get that part of the traffic that we get from Google normally, because it's just because Google says, well, we just don't want it right now. You know, this is so, it's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's why these examples are really useful, because we do bring them back to the indexing teams and kind of like say, well, what is wrong here? Why aren't we picking this up? This is something mm-hmm. reasonable. We should be doing a better job at that. Well, and especially when things are
not good, or there's something technically wrong, but I just don't see anything. And it's again, it's not a site with millions of pages, but we have 500 pieces, I think, and they're all handwritten. And you know, it has always worked. Just suddenly in November, it stopped. Just you know, during the time of the core update. So I was afraid that Google is busy with other things right now. Really,
it shouldn't be. But okay. I mean, having these kind of examples is really valuable for me, because going to the team and saying like, oh, people are complaining that content is not being indexed and I don't have any examples for you, then they'll be like, well,
Contents I have the okay from the company to use this in public, so it's okay.
Okay, cool. I mean, you can also send it to me privately if there's anything that you or anyone else kind of runs into.
Great. What's the best way to send it to you, email or Twitter?
Twitter is probably easiest. And for the most part, people can ping me and ask to kind of like be followed so they can send me a DM if that makes it easier.
All right. Thanks.
Cool. All right. Let me take a break here with regards to the recording. I can be around a little bit longer, but not as long as usual this time because we have more meetings. But thank you for joining. Thank you for all of the questions so far. And I hope we can get through some of the remaining questions as well. So people still have their hands raised. If you're watching this recording on YouTube, feel free to submit questions for the next sessions, which I'll be setting up as well. I don't know how the timing of the next sessions will be with regards to holidays and things like that, but we'll figure something out. Cool. And with that, let me pause the recording here. Just a second.